Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for a free trial. It's time for the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 176 for the end of August 2010. I'm Andrew Horowitz. Welcome aboard. Nice to have you here. I'm going to tell you up front, I don't have much good to say today. I'm going to kind of brace you for what we think is happening, give you some ideas on what we can be doing, give you a in-depth look of what we talked to our clients about this week, have Terry Bedford on, who is a great technical analyst, and who, if you recall back in April, as a matter of fact, I'm going to play a clip from that shortly. If you recall back in April, he called for the market almost spot on exactly where the market was going, and that was, of course, down. Let's see what he has to say. I have some curious comments or questions, and hopefully his comments aren't as curious, but hopefully he'll answer some of these in a way that can give us some relief as to a directional move, because we know that we've been caught between this kind of, I guess you can call it either a chop, you may want to call it a consolidation, lots of different names for the same thing, because a lot of the bulls are calling for, wow, they think there's a lot of bullish opportunity right here. Earnings have been great, but not so fast. We'll talk about Intel in a second. And at the same time, we're finding that the economics have been turning down at a velocity that is quite frightening. I must tell you, it's quite frightening. So where are we going? What are we going to be doing? Well, we're bracing ourselves and we're starting to work with the portfolio right on schedule into the fourth quarter of 2010 and into 2011 in a way that we want to be not only defensive, but we want to get shorting. And let me tell you what I wrote to our clients this week. Each and every week with the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, as well as our other clients in the global allocations, we write on a private blog. We like to have a lot of transparency. What we have done in terms of research, some of the things that are available that we look at each and every day, kind of in real time, and also do a little bit of a front end each week to discuss what's going on. And this week I wrote very simply, if the comedian Stephen Wright were writing this, the publication that we put out, I think he would say, right now I'm having amnesia and deja vu all at the same time. Because it's one of those times that, as I see it, there's these eerie similarities to past events and clearly others that appear out of nowhere. And looking back on the week, it's probably a good idea to start with the end and I guess work backwards, since it's where all the deja vu comes in. And Friday, if you think about it, there were commitments. Commitments from both the United States and Japan to save a deteriorating economy, and they revealed those. Of course, listen, we know, we've been hearing about this enough, that it's a lot of feather ruffling and chest thumping. But governments clearly know. They know that it's all it takes to really generate at least a spark. And then we had Fed Greenspan at a central banking summit in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, who carefully chose his speaking words and provided as much, I think, optimism as he possibly could. And, he was clearly in sharp contrast to his comments 2 weeks ago, right? He stated that the Fed had no triggers set currently for further monetary policy easing and that he sees continued economic growth. That's kind of the Fed amnesia, the amnesia portion of the Stephen Wright comment. But you know, it was just a couple of weeks back that the Fed was really concerned and started an asset buying. And they said it was not to knock down the value or the current asset and balance sheet. But you know what? They also said in the same speech this Friday that the Fed would do all it can to ensure growth. So in effect, if you think about it for a second, the Fed is continuing to believe that they're going to have to step in their efforts. You know, kind of a glass half full, half empty kind of concept here. A lot of people thought, okay, hey, the Fed's going to be there. Don't fight the Fed. Don't fight the tape, clearly. But at the same time, when you think about it, clearly they're saying, they're really talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're saying, you know, the economic growth is continual. We'll do whatever we have to do, and we're not going to do it yet. So in effect, the Fed continues to just really put out the ultimate carrot, right? They're putting that carrot right in front of the investors, in front of the bulls. Call it maybe the new Greenspan put, or I don't know, maybe the Bernanke backstop. But this is in the new world currently that we have of rhetoric gone wild. For the short-term strategy, you know, in the short term, this strategy often works because it really, you know what it does? It scares the heck out of short sellers or anyone really, you know, in the treasuries. Do you see what treasuries did on Friday? And it also had the added benefit, by the way, wink, wink, of lowering the cost for the very securities the Fed had said they were going to be starting to purchase last week. So on this kind of discussion that the Fed had, treasury prices dropped, and it was the single one-day rise of yields since June. And even before the speech, there was some kind of comments going around that, wow, the GDP release that was 1.6. Did you see that? A 1.6% GDP number compared to the 2.4 that was originally forecasted. Now, of course, this is up from the estimates of 1.4, but I got to tell you something. That was outright awful. Outright awful. Terrible. At this stage of recovery, the U.S. economy should be somewhere close to at least a 3% print at this point. But you know, you have to think about it for a second. You have the unemployment where it is. Then we had Japan was out with comments regarding their desire to stop the rise of the yen. We've been talking about this. Last week in particular, I told you the exact instruments to buy when this was about to happen. Again, it was more scare tactics with no actual commitment, but it did move to lower the yen by more than 1% on Friday alone. So the strong comments out of Japan and out of the U.S. kind of, in a way, helped to spook investors into equities in that they rolled out of treasuries and the risk trade was back on. And that was good. At least that was the official line from the media. More likely what it looks like is that the markets again started downward after they saw the GDP print and after they saw the revision to the University of Michigan on Friday, which was lower than initially thought. And what happened is the market started moving down again to that 1040 level that we've been talking about and bounced off very dramatically. Now, is this magic? Is it hocus pocus? Is it voodoo? No. It's simply that what we see is that the buy program, so to speak, go into play when that happens. So when you look at the overall, I guess you would say the technicals, you know, and exactly what's going on right now, you have to think that 1040 line is going to hold for a while, but when we start moving down a couple more times, it's going to start to crumble. Our feeling is that the news out of Bernanke was actually quite negative. If you think about what he said for a second, you know, he said he's going to do everything that he can do, and it was an admission that there was much more work to do, right? Now, you couple this with very weak economic reports over the past several days. You had the housing number, which was just absolutely horrendous. You saw the GDP print that was bad. We saw a lot of the manufacturing numbers that were awful. Retail doesn't look good. And then the crescendo, the profit warning from Intel. By the way, more wink winks, more nods. Did you see the time that Intel announced their lowered expectations? They lowered their margin expectation and their revenue expectation, which of course then lowers their EPS numbers. But it came out exactly at 10 o'clock. Now, was Intel playing games? Absolutely. They put out that press release to back up right to the Bernanke speech because they knew that it would catch people off guard or not looking. Intel was initially halted, but what happened was they did it because they knew that Bernanke was going to steal the show and hopefully it would get lost in the shuffle. But you know, if you think about it, it was only 6 weeks ago that Intel had their best, quote, best quarter ever and guided their outlook higher. We talked about this on DH Unplugged a few times. As a matter of fact, John Dvorak was very excited about the numbers that came out for Intel, and how couldn't you be? The fact of the matter is those numbers were really good. The problem is the suddenness. this change just a few weeks later, it really shows us that, as we see it, there's velocity. Velocity is the main point here, building, that supports the thesis that a significant slowdown is occurring, right? You see it in front of you. Now, Intel cited the sharp slowing in PC demand as the main component of this. J. Crew came out with their earnings last week and their conference call, of course, and the CEO commented and said that the consumer, quote, the consumer has gone cold. And again, you blend this in with a variety of other economic indicators, like as in the ECRI, U.S. Weekly Index, and the future inflation gauge. It's just not showing any inflation or pickup of activity. Inflation is important when it comes to long-term outlook because it's a sign of a growing economy. So the question then you have to ask yourself is, me, you, everybody else, what does this mean to us as investors? So it appears that the longer term is really not looking so pretty, as the Intel reinstatement, I think, is going to be grounds for a lot more. It's maybe the tip of the iceberg, really, if you think about it, for a lot more downgrades to come from companies and probably from analysts. Analysts have been super aggressive in increasing their numbers over the last quarter, and now all of a sudden that we see this downturn, the austerity measures in Europe, et cetera, they're probably going to start bringing down estimates. We also see that the consumer has been pulling back even further. So this is going to be a problem. You know, we see that, you know, the consumer discretionary names out there, the cyclicals, the leading indicators there, the technologies have becoming very much off, and the defensive sectors have been doing much better. And when you look actually at that, what's going on, we see that the last GDP report showed that the consumer were still slightly there. That was actually the bright spot in the numbers last week, but it's looking like it may be the last time for a while that it stays that strong, as really we saw the end of the second quarter, the loss of the emergency benefits and the extended benefits and the jobless benefits, et cetera, fading. And the high employment rate is probably going to approach 10%, at least the next time we see it, next Friday's NFP, probably going to have it ticking up to about 9.7 to 9.8 as we see it. So this is a big problem. And what you're seeing is a rotation out of the more cyclical names and into more defensive names right now. What's also interesting is that when you look at the equity markets right now, you know, you always see this kind of move up and down of the markets. You're going to see pops, you're going to see drops, you're going to see moves, you're going to see people getting short covered, etc. But again, when we always talk about this whole idea of the desk color that we see all the time, it's a continuation of, as they call it, renting, people who buy things for one or two or three or four days, and short covering that goes back into the build stocks up and then to drop them. Lots of economics coming out this week. We'd be surprised to see if much of them really beat at all. And since a lot of them have been revised downward, probability is they'll meet. So when it comes to the economy and the world right now, I guess Winston Churchill would say it's a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside of an enigma, right? Because developed companies within the Eurozone are talking a tremendous amount about budgetary restraint and fiscal responsibility. Much of the world markets are looking at cool, overheating economies like the Asian region, South Korea, Australia, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, India, New Zealand, just a few have actually tightened rates, raised their rates. And emerging markets like Brazil, Peru, Chile, Canada in the developed areas, Israel in the Middle East are increasing rates. On the other hand, the U.S. looks to be in need of new stimulus measures. So there's this conundrum. So as we're aware, the U.S. is a key driver of global trade, and it's obvious there's a pronounced economic slowing. Now, Europe is trying to win back the favor of the world as they need to continue debt issues at a reasonable cost, okay? The region's countries need to get their balances, the sheets in line, their budgets all arranged in order to expeditiously avoid any further downgrades. Last week, we saw Ireland downgraded. So the austerity measures have already started to show through, and the world is slowing. But Asia is overheating, and several areas right now are really considered inflation hot zones. So the policy measures to cool economies won't include stimulus. So this is going to slow economic growth on a worldwide basis. But when you take this all in total, all roads lead back to the U.S. as a slowdown, I think can provide pretty much a double whammy here. Since we already have an internal slowdown, coupled with the high levels of unemployment, it's really going to dampen the future growth prospects. So right now, until we get a clean break below 1040 on the S&P with the trend and the moving averages sustaining a declining path, for our clients, we're going to be slowly positioning portfolios with a higher level of short positions, hedging. Already we've increased the European short exposure, scaled back on individual securities, as well as the long exposure we have on indexes in the developing markets area, for example. But for now, patience is definitely going to be required. So I don't think you should jump in at this point, because we need to see all of this excess buying that has been on bounces dry up, if it does, and the continuation of this kind of move with economic numbers and with earnings, because that's going to be the final nail in the coffin, if you will, or the final check mark to go short. Right now, going short has been a very difficult affair. Going long has been a very difficult affair, depending on where you did either. But the fact is that we do see that a major breakdown to about 850 on the S&P 500 by the end of 2011 is very possible. And of course, we talk about the S&P because it's such a high correlation right now. But the one thing that you have to remember is that the 800-pound gorilla, you know who that is, right? That's government, is participating in the capital markets through stimulus and all sorts of means of upholding, holding positions in banks and obviously their interest rate being so low, tax issues, extension of employment benefits involved in the financial regulatory bills and law and legislation. So you need to tread carefully. So we do know and we see that the tide has turned, right? It has turned negative towards stimulus measures and additional debt additions for the U.S. So the Fed, which we think is almost out of ammunition as rates are not about to go below zero and they're not about to go negative, but there's just so much easing that they can do. So even if the banks are pushed to lend, they can't require the consumer to borrow. And all the things that we've seen right now is the banks have actually made it somewhat easier in a lot of areas, and the tendency to lend is desirous, but you just don't have the borrowing. People are not looking to borrow. Kind of like the old, you could take the horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Very simple. Well, there's water right now, but the horse isn't drinking when it comes to additional credit exposure. People learned a big lesson here. That doesn't mean they won't make the same mistake again. Individuals and the way and the nature of the way that we are is we like our things. We all like our things. We like our toys and our technology. We like getting that iPad. We like the new sofa. We like the new car. We like the pool. We like to go out to eat. These are things that are just ingrained in our culture here in the U.S. and has been growing around the world as well. It's not only here. But the fact remains that there is a point that we say no more, no mas. And is it now? Have we learned our lesson? You know what? Probably not. I can't say we learned lessons because we keep on making the same mistakes over and over. We always talk about how when the Enron days were here and derivatives blew up the market back then, long-term capital management, everybody swore no more derivatives. Derivatives were a bad word, an evil word. It was like a four-letter word for how long? Like a year? And then everything was back to normal. Securitization was this horrible thing that happened where repackaging and packaging and repackaging of bundles of credit deals and housing deals and loans were put into a gigantic bag and then sold off as very highly rated because they would strip things out. They would throw things in. You couldn't really differentiate one thing from the other in that bag. So what'd they do? They're doing it all over again. Securitization, they want to kind of push that back to invigorate lending. So this way, the banks will lessen their risk and just pawn it off on you. But you know what? Nobody's biting right now. It's just not happening. Everybody learned a lesson in that point. And adjustable rate mortgages, subprime debt, all these things that went on with such fervor over the last number of years, last decade. For technology stocks, the technology bubble, the mortgage bubble, the hedge fund fiascos, the Madoff situations, all this stuff has people waking up to the realities that, yeah, well, it's fun, but until the bubble bursts, I hate that word, the bubble, because it's overused, isn't it? I mean, I'm so sick of looking at that word, looking at Google Trends and seeing how many times the word bubble has been used with regard to economics and finance is ridiculous. You know, there's a bond bubble, there's a real estate bubble in Japan or in China, not in Japan, definitely not, in China. And, you know, what we're seeing right now is that the excess that has to be worn off, that has to be kind of the hangover that needs a lot of tomato juice right now and needs a lot of Excedrin and needs to really just be to rest it off, is what we're seeing right now. Sure, we saw that nice move higher for the economy because it was against clearly easy comparisons and it had really nowhere else to go. You know, there still is a requirement for food, sustenance, shelter, etc. But you know what? That's about all that's happening right now. Inventory levels at a lot of the retail is starting to swell again. We saw Abercrombie come out with a horrible inventory number, and their retail levels were terrible. Again, J. Crew came out with some concerning levels. We saw that Walmart on their conference call said that people are really simply buying as close to the need of what they desire. In other words, their time to shop is kind of on a need basis, just-in-time basis. So when you add all this up, it's, you know, it's not very exciting when it comes to the overall economy. Now, there are plenty of opportunities inside of that. We saw some buyout issues, you know, with this whole three-part situation with HP and Dell going on, which is getting a little ridiculous. Looks like HP is going to win that one, though. They have obviously more deeper pockets at this point, and they can play a lot longer and a lot harder. But Dell did win out, at least on the fact that they are on the acquisition trail, and maybe people are going to look a little bit more favorably on that. But at the same time, kind of give you both sides here, Intel is essentially saying that the PC market is shutting down. It's falling off a cliff. That's a big concern. That's exactly what put us into the place we were in last time. It wasn't that the outlook for profits were shrinking. It wasn't that we had a housing bubble that just exploded. It was a combination of things that happened, but consumers pulled back. Consumers got scared. They were losing their jobs. There was no job prospect. There was the reality that banks were also losing money. There was a reality that there was little ammunition at the time for recovery. And that's where things started to go sour. And that's occurring again. The question is, will consumers have, you know, a better faith that they'll be bailed out this time or less? What do you think? You think there's going to be a greater bailout this time? There's less depth to get there. You can't lower interest rates any lower. And if you did, by the way, do you think that would work? No. There's just so much quantitative easing you could do. Because the fact of the matter is the bureaucracy of the way that the money gets to the people in this environment is pathetic. The way that we saw the $700 or $800 billion bailout get put through is absolutely abysmal. Why did China's work? Because they got it there without the red tape. The pork that was put into this deal, we all know, was absolutely incredulous. It was the worst thing that we've ever seen, and yet we let it happen. President Obama should be ashamed of what happened, I'll be honest with you, because, you know, with no pork involved in this to start with, or a lot less, I should say, it got bloated just to pass. And that wasn't what we wanted. We voted for change at the time. I didn't vote for President Obama. I didn't vote for the other side either. You know that. I didn't vote for either side because I didn't think either of them were going to do the job that we needed. But that's a different story for a different day. Right now, without going into a whole rant and a roll about this and pissing off the people that like Obama, pissing off the people that like the Republican side, it doesn't matter. It's about investments here. Listen to this for a second. This was recorded in April, the last time we talked to Terry Bedford, and we're going to get right to a conversation with him. Some stocks are doing very well, and I think the biggest thing is that the idea that earnings are doing so well are shocking a lot of people, and people are just throwing in and saying, oh my gosh, look at these earnings, they're so great. I'm in, finally. But nonetheless, so at 1228, I mean, this is, we're talking about the market now, the S&P 500. You don't think that you think there's going to be a big fight there?
Oh, I do. And I think that these things tend to be predictable, which is what I like about it. I think if they concede the rally to 12:28. We get it to 12:28. Let's say we even stop a few points shy, or we go 12:31 and go a few points higher or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all the bears are going to say, you know what? Well, not the bears, but people who are exasperated because the market's going up.
Right.
They're just going to throw in a towel. They're going to say, okay, it's over, it's over. And I think at that point, then I don't want to sound like there's an invisible hand, but I think the powers that be and the people who believe in cycles and all that other sort of thing, they'll find a way to say that 12:28 is the number and you should be short, and they'll start shorting the market. So I think that one way or another, the market's going to decline from 12:28. If it's a 3% correction, 5%, 10%, who knows? But you'll get a decline from 12:28. There will be a point when both bears and bulls will be on the exact same side and they'll both be selling, and it's probably 12:28.
All right, so that was April of 2010. All right, so we know that the markets have been doing a lot of different things, mostly trading within a range. And I thought, you know, when I mentioned this last week, who better to bring back than Terry Bedford? If you remember, we talked with him back in April, and Terry had some very, very wise things to tell us at the time. I want you to listen here for a second. This is a clip from the podcast back in April when Terry was talking to us, when the S&P 500 was about 1,200 plus or minus at the time. Take a listen to this. So, Terry, you heard that. I mean, you were spot on. That was pretty amazing.
Well, it's nice to make a good call once in a while.
Oh, come on. You're being kind to yourself. You're great at this. Now, we talked a lot about it that last podcast. How are you, by the way?
I'm well. I'm very well. Yeah.
I sometimes get right into it without the pleasantries. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
When we talked some time ago and you had made that call that in the 12, I think you said, and in a range of about 12:30 maximum or somewhere around there would be the time that short sellers would come in and then bring it down. And now we've been trading in this range, this kind of touching 1040, then moving it back up dramatically, then moving back down. It seems to me that there's a lot of confusion out there, and there's a lot of people running for cover in multiple ways. When it moves up too much, they're running too much, cover to sell and take some profits. When it moves down, they're just running in, like a buy program. I mean, is that what you're seeing?
Well, I think we're still in the range, and you're wise to mention 1040. 1040 is a sort of a key support level. That's sort of a line in the sand for bulls. I think if they lost that level, which would be the level of the June lows, then you'd pretty much guarantee at least a test of 1010, which would be the sort of recent lows. So they're trying to hold 1040. There's a lot of people that are talking about head and shoulder bottom patterns, and 1040 would sort of be the line in the sand. If we lost that level, that pattern would be invalid, and you'd get a larger decline. All of that being said, make no mistake, I think the market is going down. We're just sort of in a small range here, trying to retrace and repair some of the technical damage that's occurred over the last couple of weeks. But we could get into the 1084 to the 1092 area up there in the S&P, and then I suspect we're going to get ultimately move below below SPX 1000. I think that's got to happen at this stage.
Well, I mean, what we've been seeing lately is just an incredible amount of information that has been contradictory in terms of, I've been talking about this a lot, the whole fight between earnings and economics. Economics have been coming down very strongly and in a very rapid pace that has me really questioning why things are going at such a, how fast they're going. Secondly, you had earnings that have been, generally speaking, very good. It started out with Intel blowing the doors out and doing really well. Then just on Friday, they come in and actually downgrade their own earnings 6 weeks after they came in with the last kind of, oh my gosh, things are just so beautiful out there. Were you surprised to hear that?
Not really. I mean, I'm always surprised whenever Intel says things are great, because a great part of the business is the PC market, and that market hasn't been good for a long time. I mean, I think the days of Wintel, where you had the Windows machines and the Intel processors, is pretty much over. People, there's really no reason to upgrade PCs. I mean, there is a corporate upgrade cycle with Windows 7, but to be honest, I'm always amazed and a little bit skeptical whenever Intel says things are great, because from what I hear, just anecdotally and from the people I talk to in the industry, things are not great, and they haven't been great for a long time.
Right.
So I'm not surprised by that. And I'm also not surprised that they're now guiding lower. I mean, that's pretty much been what companies have been doing for the past several quarters, really. They guide lower, and then they, you know, surprise, blow the doors off the number that they've guided lower and say, hey, things are great. 6 weeks after that, they guide lower again.
Right.
So
right.
It's sort of a game that continues on and on and on again.
All right, so Intel you weren't so surprised about, but yet at the same time, are you surprised to see the velocity, or I shouldn't say the velocity, the speed at which the economics have changed over the last month and a half?
To be honest, no. I mean, I follow the Economic Cycles Research Institute, that sort of thing.
Yeah, ECRI, with the very big print.
Yeah, that's been sort of going in a downward spiral for quite a while now, and that stuff's very good, so I'm not surprised that the numbers are coming in weaker. I'm surprised there's been as little reaction as there has been to the weak numbers, to be honest. That's a little bit of a surprise.
Well, I mean, we did see the markets come down from over, over 1,100 and change. Well, from 1,200 and change. You could think that the markets are a forward-looking instrument, but I agree with you that it's almost like, you know, that's why I find that when I say this fight, we see things like a terrible Intel number, but yet at the same time, Intel moves up after the number. You know, initially things sold off. And you see, for example, Bernanke a few weeks ago saying that there is this you know, unusually high level of uncertainty. And then, of course, John Chambers from Cisco came out with that. J. Crew comes out with, they say the consumer's gone cold. Intel comes out with 6 weeks later, this situation, and on and on and on. Traditionally, we see that technology and finance oftentimes are leaders, right? Retail too, but leaders in a market. Have you seen the financials lately? They hit a 52-week low the other day.
Yeah, I mean, I've been telling people every single day, there's two sectors, which you correctly mentioned, that lead. It's the financials and technology, and those sectors are terrible. So that's why I say I'm surprised, to be honest, that the market is not weaker than it's been. I would think that we would have already taken out the June lows by now, just with all the weakness and all the economic and corporate data that's been weak. So that's a little bit surprising to me.
What does it tell you? What does it tell you?
Well, it tells me that it's coming, that's all. I mean, you've got to keep in mind we're nearing what is the worst month of the year, which is September. And I suspect that in September we're going to get the market to decline materially. And then people will say, oh, yeah, it's the, you know, bad Intel numbers. It's the IBM, it's Cisco.
The Hindenburg.
Hindenburg, yeah, there's that too.
That's all.
There's always something. But I suspect that you're going to see the market work much, much lower in September. But there's sort of a window of opportunity for bulls to repair a little bit of damage and get the market going up into September. I don't think that'll last past that.
Well, last time we talked, you had mentioned that, if I recall correctly, that, you know, if the market started turning down, you would use some hedging, but you wouldn't necessarily possibly take out some of your long-term individual holdings. That was right?
That's right.
So there's been a lot of movement on the individual holdings that I found it's very, very difficult to hedge. So you have a market that goes down, let's just say 5% on S&P or Dow, NASDAQ, Russell. But some of the small caps just they've gotten gored is the best way to describe it. I mean, some of these numbers, you know, you have two things happening in the small cap area. You have buyers coming in for a company like a 3PAR that now I think is a large cap after the bidding is done. And you have other companies, even with like a company that, you know, had a good earnings like Netezza, and, you know, 35% one day move up because they beat out earnings and you know, guided higher. And on the other hand, you have that kind of just, you know, no earnings news, nothing happening, but markets trending lower. And these small caps have been just getting harpooned. So, you know, how do you hedge against something like that?
Well, I will always start by shorting small caps. If I think the market's going down, that's where I usually start. I short the small caps. I'm just shorting the Russell.
Right.
I'll be honest. That's where I short. And just because there's generally more travel in that index versus the other index.
Right.
But when we broke the 50-day moving averages and they started turning down, I actually just started taking off longs completely. I have very little long side exposure. There are some stocks that look great, Chipotle, Mexican Grill, things like that, F5 Networks, look great. They're great businesses, and I'm long those, but I also own puts against them. But most of the stuff I sold, just there isn't much reason to be long here when the trend is now clearly down.
And even for stocks that are good, you're saying. I mean, we own F5 as well. Chipotle, I have a different discussion on. I can make a story why this could be a, I can make a story and understand with their expansion into Europe and all that why there's a definite advantage there. I can make a good story with the higher food costs and with exactly what they serve. Exactly what they serve. The beans, the wheat products, the corn products, and the meat products, that they could really be in for a margin squeeze coming up. But that's me. You know, I'm just saying.
But the Chipotle story is more like the expansion story.
Right. No, I agree. I totally agree. At least they're not trying to say that by eating that you lose weight like Skechers does when with their shoes, right?
Right.
You know? Right. Okay, so the market levels, so 1040, what's the magic there? I think a lot of people really want to know, what's the magic at 1040? Why is it that 2 or 3 days we've seen it bounce at 1039.50, or give or take a couple of points here, but basically at 1040, everything stops, and what is it? The machines go on, they've been preset that you just buy the futures at 1040?
Well, one of the things I always talk about to my people is that you want to be involved in the market when both sides of the equation are on the same side. Basically, when bulls are buying stocks and bears are buying stocks, that's when you want to be buying stocks. And you can identify the levels. The level is 1040, and both bulls and bears are going to buy there. Bears are going to cover their short positions by buying stock, and bulls are going to buy because they have to. That's sort of that's the June lows, and as I mentioned earlier, it's sort of this, I don't want to be convoluted, but there's a head and shoulder bottom pattern. And I know people's eyes.
So it's an inverted head and shoulders, right?
Yeah, head and shoulders bottom pattern.
Right.
Because I know people's eyes glaze over when you start talking about those things and symmetrical triangles and all that sort of stuff. But you have to understand, a lot of the hot money is operated based on that sort of stuff. And everybody knows that 1040 is a level that, if the market were to decline below there, then that pattern, that inverted head and shoulders, would be invalid. If that's invalid, there's no reason to own stock, not from a technical perspective. I mean, I can make the case that there's really no reason to own stocks from any perspective. But on a short-term basis, there's a lot of people clinging to this idea that this is a normal economic recovery with all the hiccups and, you know, sort of blemishes that go along the way with that. So you have soft patches and not-so-soft patches. And those people are clinging to the idea that this is just a soft patch. You're going to get the market reversing from the 1040 area and going right back up. And they're buying that level. But from a technical perspective, that level fails. Those guys, not only will they not buy it, they will short the market. So.
Yeah, and the when we talk about the failure, we're talking about on the close, right?
On a close, yeah.
Right, because intraday it's failed a few times, but it's come right back up, and it's kind of like a trampoline effect. But, you know, it's interesting because I agree with you that a lot of the players are, you know, we talk about that the charts themselves are self-prophesizing. So what
right.
You know, so what happens here is whether or not you want to believe this ridiculousness of 1040, or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And whether you want to throw it in the garbage and say how ridiculous, it doesn't matter. The fact is it is what it is. And they will go into buy mode and cover mode. Now, when we read we read a lot of desk cover, you know, color at the end of the day. And this is basically put out by JP or Goldman or some of the players. We want to read their stuff because we want to know what their desks are seeing from their hedge funds and from the people that trade on their desks. And what we've been seeing lately is consistently the same, which is a massive hedge fund or alternative short covering, and very little individual or mutual fund buying.
Right.
And selling into strength, and these kind of things. And I don't think, I think maybe one time in the last few weeks I've seen that there was some nibbling back into the markets.
Right.
And I think that goes with what you're saying here. But as the longer this goes on, if you see that shorts are getting blown out, doesn't that the shorts, the bears, give them more ammunition to load up again?
Well, don't get me wrong. I think that that's exactly what they're going to do in September. I think the bullish traders have a small window of opportunity to maybe get back to, I'm saying it's 1084 to 1092 on the S&P. I don't want to be too fine, but it's, you know, it's in that area just under 1100. And I think that they might get back there, and if they do, I think that bears are just going to step on the market again, and you're going to see a massive decline that starts in September. All of these things, all of the stuff that I'm sure the people that are listening are aware of, the problems in Europe. You've got fiscal crisis in municipalities and states, and you know, in the United States, and all those things are going to come back, and they're going to be a player or a mover of stocks probably in the last quarter of the year. But right now, there's a window of opportunity to get the market to come back. We've had this massive decline from the 1,200 area, and you normally you'll get a little bit of backing and filling up. That's all we're getting.
Right.
I think the market goes down in the last quarter.
So what do you think is the ultimate range of the market?
I think we're going to test. We're going to go below 1,100, or excuse me, 1,000 on the S&P. So well below Dow 10,000, of course. But I think we're going to get below 1,000 on the S&P, and then you're going to get this period where people say, okay, the market's come down too fast, and let's just take a deep breath and see if it's legitimate for the market to be down here. And then ultimately, and this is really quite bearish, and I hate looking this far forward, but ultimately I think people are going to say, hey, you know what? In 2009, when the banks were reporting those earnings, they weren't real. And I think everybody knows that. I mean, we've talked about this in the past.
Yeah.
People know those earnings weren't real.
Right.
But I think people are going to go back and they're going to say, hey, you know what? The earnings weren't real in 2009, and you said, you being the financial industry, said this. And we've come to the conclusion that none of that stuff was real. The stuff you told us wasn't true. And I think as people go and revisit that, I think you're going to see a loss of confidence. You're going to see a repeat of all of the things that led to the 2009 lows. And then you'll have people talking about a test of the 2009 lows. So you're talking about S&P 666.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not saying we get there near term.
But that's where the chatter will be.
That'll be the next discussion.
Yeah. So
that's going to keep prices lower.
Well, one of the things is, so you think the catalyst here, because I think the catalyst, from what I can see, is Europe.
Right.
You know, we saw the step in of the European, you know, the EC and the monetary union over there to come in with $1 trillion, give or take, you know, a couple billion. $1 trillion of a backstop, more of kind of like, you know, walking up to a bully and saying, hey, look behind me, what I got to, you know, fight you. And the currencies kind of got stronger. They just simply had to say what they had in their gun, and the currencies got stronger. That's what happens, right? Shorts react a lot more actively to that kind of stuff. And the same thing's happening in Japan. We're actually short the yen. And we're short the yen because we believe that it's gotten to a point that the Japanese companies can't be effectively earning any kind of decent profits, especially the car companies, when the yen is over 85. And that being the case, the Japanese market, which is now in a bear market, 20% down from its high, is not going to be able to do anything, and that's just going to create more problems. And at this point, what's a few billion or trillion more yen to the Japanese deficit at this point?
Oh, that's true.
you got
a good point there. Yeah.
So we actually shorted them, and it's doing pretty well. We actually, you know, looking at some of these other areas like treasuries, I mean, the amount of money that went in there was just amazing. But the point is, though, that when you look all around the world, it still seems to me that the area that's going to be the biggest problem is going to be Europe. I mean, I just don't see anything good coming out of there. In fact, I'll go one step further and ask your opinion. It appears to me that Germany has come out with some decent numbers lately. You've seen between consumer confidence, fine, put that aside, but their actual numbers and expectations of the next year seem to be okay, even though everybody agrees that the second half of the year will be slower for Germany. The rest of the European areas are still slow and doing terribly. But yet, at the same time, a lot of people have been hanging their hats on the fact that growth is still there, and it is focused in Germany. I think that they're going to be in for a very, very difficult and a big crying session when they realize that a lot of the sales have been brought forward when the euro was so low that many companies went out and said, hey, I can get this at a discount at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just like the cash for clunkers, et cetera, just like the housing credit, we saw what the housing numbers were this week. They were abysmal.
No, I agree. Yeah.
So I think that...
I think what you have in Europe is you have all these austerity programs coming in, and for some reason people have become convinced that the way to grow the economy is to cut spending. And, you know, I don't want to be one of those people that says you have to spend, and just tax and spend, that sort of thing. Because I don't believe in that at all. But I do believe that if you start, you know, on these austerity programs, that that's going to lead to slower growth, not stronger growth. And all of these GDP numbers they have for Europe are just way out of whack, and they're way too high. And I think that people are going to realize that. In fact, I was just reading a piece from Societe Generale.
Oh, I have that piece. I have the same piece.
Yeah. And they're saying, you know, exactly the same sort of thing, is that, you know, people are going to be for a rude awakening when they realize how low some of these numbers ultimately are.
Right.
They're just way off track.
Right.
So I agree with you on Europe. I think that's a mess, and it's sort of the other shoe that's waiting to drop, and it will drop.
Yeah. Right. So let's talk a little bit about volumes. I know last time we talked about volumes, you said, direction issues. And I want to talk about some of these signals that we're going to look at, because I want to give some people some concrete things they can use. But volumes. Okay. Volumes have been, you know, it's interesting, because when you hear the guys talking on television, radio, I often find that they're talking their book and they're kind of giving you the direction that they want to play. So, you know, oftentimes you'll find that they come on and they talk about things such as, well, volumes don't matter, we're very bullish here because blah, blah, blah. Now, on the other hand, you see the other guy coming on saying, hey, look at volumes, how low they are on the up days and how high they are on the down days, and that's a key sign and a key signal for the markets right now. But at the same time, you have to realize, I think, that there's a lot of the retail investors are out. I talked about the desk color earlier. I mean, do volumes matter? I can't believe that volumes don't matter.
Well, it's like everything. Volume does matter, of course. Volume is the ultimate. You know, people vote by buying and selling stock. If enough people are buying stock and they're buying in volume, that's accumulation. If enough people are selling stock and selling in volume, of course, that's distribution. So what we've had is we've had this big distributive top all the way back from the S&P 1200 days and higher, actually. And I think that the volume does matter, but that's a sort of a bigger picture thing. Short term, stocks can go up on no volume at all. And I've always encouraged people that, you know, you have to be cognizant of the fact that volume does matter, but at the same token, recognize that you're trading the price. You're not trading volume. You know,
right.
You're not trading indicators. And I get a lot of grief from my cohorts that are sort of other technicians, because they'll say, well, look at this indicator, look at that indicator, and I'll say, well, you know, that's nice, but here's what the price is doing. The price is still going up. I'm long. And they'll say, well, the price is going up, but this indicator is falling down. That's a non-confirmation. I'm short. And to me, that sort of thinking has never really made any sense, because you're not trading those indicators. And in this case, you're not trading the volume. You're trading the price. But, you know, that's sort of a short-term thing. As I said, I think that all this stuff, I think you're right about Europe 100%. And I think there's another shoe that drops, and it'll drop in the last quarter of the year. But short term, there's a window of opportunity for the market to go up a bit, and it can go up on no volume. And in fact, it probably will go up on no volume, which will be, you know, ultimately a bad thing. So, I mean, I think that right now, you just got this perception that the market needs to go back up a bit. And I think that's all that's happening.
So you said you're short here, though, right? You're pretty much short?
I'm short longer term. When I'm saying going up, I'm saying less than 1,100 on the S&P. So we're talking less than 40 points up.
Right. Which happens, yeah, here's the other problem, and you're talking in a very short time, you're talking about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Here's what's interesting that I find that the biggest problem that you're seeing right now in terms of how we look at these markets. The problem is that from this point to, as you said, 4%. You know, the old days used to take a few months to get there. It would take even a good week, it wouldn't get there, right? It would take at least a month if it was a good month to get there. Now, 2 days it takes. 1 day it takes to get there, and it makes planning. I think it makes it much, much more difficult, don't you? I mean, the individual investor must be pulling their hair out, saying, "Hey, which way do I go here?" Because at any given time, it looks like the market's going to take off or just plummet.
I think you have to look at it in terms of a slightly bigger picture. I mean, if you look at what the trend of the market is, the trend is clearly down. And you get markets up 1.3% today, and people say, well, okay, it's great, it's Bernanke, it's whatever it is. But who cares? I mean, you know, two days ago in the last 4 days, the previous 4 days, it was down 4%. So you just have to keep it all in perspective. I think it's just backing and filling, but what is the trend? Is the trend up or down?
No, the trend is clearly down right now.
The trend's down. So when you get the market to rally towards the declining 50-day moving average, you sell it, and once you go back down. But I suspect we're going to make relative new lows, and then I think people will get really bearish. They'll say, hey, wait a minute. The fact that there was no volume on the up days, maybe that does matter. Maybe that did matter.
Right.
Maybe that was a sign that people were distributing stocks. And, you know, I was a sucker for buying stocks.
Right. Do you think that the hedge funds, the guys like Drunken Miller and these guys that are coming out of, the hedge funds are going to affect the markets? Are they going to do like a blast sale? Or, you know, how's it? Because that's what we've seen before. That's the kind of distribution we've seen.
Well, I think that those guys are definitely selling some of the leading stocks. I think that's why you're seeing weakness in names like Apple and Goldman Sachs. And, you know, some of the stocks that guys like me watch as sort of key names.
Yeah.
The weakness in those stocks, I think, is hedge funds selling. They're trying to raise cash. A lot of hedge funds are extremely bearish. I talk to guys, and they're very, very bearish.
But they got to keep it quiet because they got to distribute their shares.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. So they might be talking one side of saying, well, you know, we've got this prospect is good, but they're, you know, sort of, I won't say it secretly, but they're bearish.
Right.
They're selling stock.
Right. Right. I mean, listen, the fact of the matter is that, you know, when Intel came out with their numbers, with the downgrade, they immediately got backing by UBS saying, hey, you know what, we still like it. Well, they would like it if Intel said they were going out of business because they own the shares and they have to say that. I mean, they can't say, you know, unless they're going the other side, they would be, you know, it wouldn't be allowed in the firms to do such
That's
a thing.
Right.
So, you know, they're going to try to support it. And then you got another guy that comes in behind it and tries to support it. And this is why you're seeing one day down of a stock, whatever it may be, or a market, and the next day it's up, and vice versa. So, you know, I think, you know, I agree with you. It's kind of like, you got to wait till the fat lady sings on all of this, but she's starting to hum and hum loudly. And I agree with you that a lot of these economics are going to hit. So what are the hedging strategies that you use that you could explain?
Well, in terms of individual stocks, as I mentioned, like we're long Chipotle and we're also long puts. So we're long the stock, we're long the we're actually long a series of puts, but we're long the 150s, we're long the 140s, and the 130s in varying degrees. So we're long stock, long puts. That's just a simple married put strategy. We have strangles on some other stocks and some more complicated strategies, but all of the stocks that we're long, we have defined the risk on the downside in some way or another. It might be from selling it out of the money call, selling it out of the money call and buying an at the money put, or all of those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
All the stocks that we're long, we have defined risk on the downside.
Right.
I don't want to say we don't do pair trades in stocks, but you know, we are short IBM and we're long Dell, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
Right.
And those sorts of strategies.
Right.
And we're also short a lot of the index. And we short the index on into every rally. So I'll be shorting the index at the S&P and get up to 1084. I'll short it again.
Will you short it as you go? And then, in other words, will you short it at that point, or will you short it as it's moving higher?
Well, we're short some now.
Right.
We're short the bigger position, the core position, but we will short more and we'll get dramatically overweight short at 1084.
So you're going to wait till that point?
Yeah, we're going to wait till that. I mean, I think that the market is going to rally here to 1084. 1084, 1092. That's the level that I'm looking at, and I would short the market again.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
And we're short, you know, we are short a lot of stocks. There's a lot of stocks that just absolutely look terrible. All of the defense industry stocks.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree
with that.
Yeah,
because they cut down on government spending in that area.
Yeah, and they're going to. I mean, it's logical. That's what's going to happen. They're going to be the casualties of this stuff. They're just going to cut defense.
Right.
Spending,
right.
You know. But we're short all of those stocks. Short specific areas like Netflix. Short that stock.
That must be hurting.
No. We shorted it at 132. Covered some at 127, I think. It's a very sporadic trade. We have an opinion on Netflix that's building a major, major top.
Right.
And it's funny enough that the reason we have that belief is the fact that the volume trends have been wrong all the way up. So volume's declining on the rallies, and that's that's sort of a sign that the price is going to roll over. We're not aggressively short right yet, but we're going to be short Netflix. We can get a close below 120. We'd be more aggressively short, but we are short a bit right now. But we're short all kinds of stocks that just look terrible. Short yeah. Apple.
Yeah, Apple, I mean, you know, we've been in and out of that a little bit. We have a small position in it. It's just dead right now.
Yeah, it's the stock should be going up on the new iPods and all the leaks that they're doing, and it's not going anywhere.
So right.
I have a theory that, you know, stocks is being distributed by hedge funds. It's the biggest holding on almost every hedge fund. And when they've got to raise cash,
that's where they go.
They're selling their Apple.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so Terry, how do people get in touch with you and use your services and, find you?
Our services are at baresearch.com. We have a newsletter that we publish daily. It's more of an option-oriented newsletter, but you also get some, I hope will be good stock
some goodies.
Ideas.
Yeah, some goodies in there.
Yeah.
I hear you.
BAResearch.com. That's
okay.
Where you can find it.
All right, we'll put that information on the website, on the show notes for The Disciplined Investor under this show, under this podcast. So just go right over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and we'll have a link right to Terry's website. Terry Bedford, we'll have you back in a few months and see exactly how that pattern plays out.
Okay.
Thanks,
great.
Buddy.
Thanks.
All right, be well. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. Looks like what we're seeing here is a continued down, according to Terry Bedford, with a few bumps up and down, which kind of coincides and coordinates exactly with what our thinking is going to be, that we're going to see some bumpy rides moving ahead and then the ultimate move down before we can see some kind of a flush out of what we've believe is the appropriate value right now. There are some, of course, there are some things you have to realize. There are individual stocks that will do better, and that's why we will be working the individual side as well as Terry does the same kind of thing, I think, in a way. A little differently. We actually manage the money for the clients in the way that we believe our Quanta, Tecna, and Funda. So you kind of, depending on where you want to look, Tecna is, of course, when we're range-bound. Quanta is when you want to look for ideas. And Funda is kind of when you're seeing a recovery cycle. And sometimes you have to mix and match those. But the order usually that we like to look at them is Quanta, Funda, Tecna. We look at the quantitative analysis. We look at the fundamental analysis and the Tecna. But right now, Tecna is taking over in that the ranges on the S&P, on the individual stocks, are somewhat defined. But yet, they are always kind of those rules that are meant to be broken, as we see it. So next week, we're going to actually bring on some hedging strategies, how to go short this market, where to hedge the portfolio out, bring back Kevin Hoffman. We also have Kate Stalter the week after that. And lots of great things coming up. I promise you that. Do me a favor. Tell a friend. Make sure you go tell somebody before Labor Day, hey, go onto iTunes and subscribe to Disciplined Investor. Gives us some great exposure. Gives them some great opportunity. I have a few things I want to share with you and some questions answered from listeners like you. Simply write in to Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just throw it in there, and I'll be happy to answer anything that we can when we have some time. And we'll do some of that next week as well. In the meantime, make sure to go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And simply when you go there, there'll be the show notes for this show, lots of information available. And if you want to figure out what we're doing and see how we're doing things, you know, you could always come on and check out the trial that we have to our private blog for our clients. Or if you want us to invest for you, you know how to get there as well. All on the show notes of this show on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next week, let's watch those economics carefully. Let's watch the trends carefully. Let's watch the volume carefully. And, of course, let's look at those moving averages and see if it all aligns to where we think it's going to be over the next several months. Again, it doesn't happen all at once, hopefully. We don't want to see a big drop in one day. That's not fun. But you know what? It does look like that things are starting to get a lot colder here. Again, until the next time, this is Andrew Horowitz wishing you a great week of investment success. See you real soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.